My name is George Lindoff. I was born in Juneau, 1947, October 24th. And I still stay here and I've been fishing most of my life. Drafted, that's what it says. Become Macklemore's undesirable minor consuming. 18 years old and going on 19 that I got drafted. And I was getting a little older and I was going over when my classmates are coming back. Freddie Bennett, James, Victor, all them guys from Royal Ale were all my classmates. I tried to go in the Navy. I said, you can have me before you, or is it going to the Navy? No, we got you first. I said, that don't make sense, does it? I said, I want to join up for 4 years and you guys only take me for 2 years. I grew up fishing out here in the, since I was a kid. Indian Islands, though, my brother James and I made a lot of money, most of my classmates. Vicar already got his own boat by the time he got out of high school. Just his dad was a skipper. His dad is my mother's cousin, made him my uncle. He looked like he's a half white, but he could speak Tlingit better than some of the Tlingits around here. So he got that co-talker for World War II and he got a Silver Star, which was pretty good. Fort Lewis, racial. It was bad. Then over here, you watch TV, Saturday Night Fights. Just grab a chair, go up behind the barracks and watch the fights there. Colors and white going at it all the time. They called me Chief Snowball once in a while. Then Ice if I went against them. I went to school in Fort Lewis, Durango, Colorado. Had a chance to go up Fairbanks for university up there, but I wanted to take a chance and get out of Alaska, get out on my own. Like I said, I was making good money fishing. Back then, $5,000-$6,000 was a lot of money. Fort Lewis, that's where I really started seeing that racial problem. I had one big Samoan that backed us up quite a bit. He backed up because he was bigger than I was, but he challenged. He talking about this Alaska thing, fishing and everything. He said, let me show you something, because his arms are pretty big, breaking arms. Went down, sat down, and I said, when you're ready, he said, go. I put him down, and he looked at me, damn! I said, the walls and Huna can do that. Most of those fishermen. He said, there's 8 people to a boat. So we had the racial thing here, too. We had fishermen from Puget Sound. A lot of them were college, basketball players, football players. Just thought they were a step above the locals, smart. That's your first racial problem. We used to have a lot of fights in that dock down there. Tab the boat. There's that guy. I said, yeah, you're the cute thing, you. Give a kiss of makeup and just rub them, keep rubbing them. Because a lot of those natives here, from my size, some of them are a little bigger. Some of them can fight pretty good. Some verbally just egg them on and get somebody else to fight them. Some of my buddies were, my cousins too, were like, egg him on, then he'll punch the lights out. My brother James was the same way. Learned how to fight before we got in the military. That helped a little too. Vietnam, Cameron Bay. It was probably about 110 degrees there, and first night there we got rocket incoming. Then we had motors and machine gun fire at the buzz towers. And then the first thing you smell is over there is one of those big black squirrels were coming up in the corners of the Caron Bay there. We're asking, what the hell are those stink? I looked at him, I said, what I think it is? He said, yeah, they cut 50-gallon drums in half. And they have those wooden buildings there where they put that can in there, and guys that wind up on KP are getting into trouble, so they have to go in the morning. That was worse than going to the fireplace. When I first got there, it was guard duty. Guard duty, mostly weapons. You got to pick your own weapon, but you only get it when you get it ready to leave the company area. I thought it was going to be my duty when I was guard duty. Third day, they said, no, you're going on the field. I was kind of confused. I said, this is not the field. No, you had to go out. They call it Indian country. where the Viet Cong and NVA are. Another experience I had there was up in Tanim Province was rice. I was a rice eater for this place here. Then I had that one Vietnamese explain to me, a Chu Hoi, Kit Carson, come from the enemy to work with the Americans. And I said, what the hell is that on the road? They're drying on those blankets, longer it is here, wider. That was like water buffalo crap. Then another container, they had different animal crap. Then you go to one of those hamlets, so have ditches as wide as this thing here. Container down there, and they have a little pit where that human waste will go out and go into that container. You know what they use that for? Fertilizer for the rice. I said, I'm going back to potatoes. You ought to see how we fertilize the potatoes. I said, I'm going back to sea rations. You get over it because actually get into contact, nothing as bad as what's happening out there in combat. It was a nightmare for a while. First couple of times in combat, then I noticed every time I got in the contact, they were shooting way over. And I said, them guys trying to fire their weapons on automatic, and they're up to my shoulder, small, light. I said, they can't hold it. I said, they're missing like hell, wasting ammo. So I told the guy, I said, watch, I'll sight mine in rifle and take some headshots. We call them headshots, only hit in the body, don't matter. They thought I was Superman. I was sick. I get used to shooting deer, but you see a bullet hit a body's like hitting clay, jello. You hear it hit, and you'll see the chunk of flesh fall off. Sound never leaves you. You make all kinds of funny sounds, but you hear that bullet when it hits human flesh. Just on the body's popping the head, you're sick. But then it's the body, you just like a chunk of flesh falling off and like putty. Then you hear that blook, never leaves you. That's one of the things you find out when you're in combat too. Well, some of these guys were bragging about being in combat. You ask them, what's the first thing you see when you get in combat? Lord, bodies, dead bodies. I said, yeah, what else do you see? Bullet holes, wounds, everything. I said, yeah, what else? Oh, anything else? I said, yeah, you see their pants, with the messed your pants, pissed your pants, everything. Stink, and you have to go out there and get that body count before the weather changes. By afternoon, there'll be just all kinds of bugs, everything, feeding off them. Stink. Well, we lucky, though, we had a Chinook that brought out a little, almost a caterpillar, as long as this here, dig a ditch. Push all the bodies in there. They had quite a few of them around Tanim Province. We worked in the first cav in that South Vietnamese unit. I think we got 280-something body count. Then a lot of blood trails going into the jungle. They drug some of their bodies away. I always asked that Vietnamese guy, why they do that? Oh, maybe he's a big shot, big guy. You know, want you guys to have information on him, what unit and everything like that. We already know the unit. That's what I started off with. Then we started going on recon. They brought out the smaller ones, because it was lighter. Because when you go out on recon, you fill up your pack sack with, you have about eight canteens of water and food, just your socks. Stuff as many cans as you can in there. Mostly peaches and pecan pie and a lot of that peaches and that pecan pie, I think you call it, biscuit bread, which is your other weapon. Yeah, it goes along with your dog tags. You don't wear your dog tags there, put it down on your shoe. Then you have a hole in that P38 for your, just put it under your shoelace so you can just open your can right up. So I look at some of those sea rations were dated back in World War II. I said, it's kind of weird. I said, they're okay? Because we were starving. We didn't give a damn after that. We had used our steel pot sometimes to cook, add all the meat in there, and the Vietnamese will throw the hot stuff in. Then they'll make a rice and make a stew and have it with rice. It's pretty good. sweat themselves as easy like, just real hot stuff, like Mexicans, the peppers, hotter than hot. Make your eyes water. Yeah, we try not to make them, but you stay out there at sometimes 2-3 months, as long as we stayed out before we had to go back to the rear to rebuild tracks, equipment, everything like that. Try to avoid making buddies. And the next day you'll be gone and you'll be sitting there. It hurts quite a bit, but then you'll be sitting there and thinking about it. I said, you'll have your sergeant, usually a color guy, NCO. Snap out of it. Get out of it. You'll be next. Challenges weren't simple. You had to learn by experience. After a while, you just suck it up. Yeah. This year, I got probably around my 8th month, I got cocky. I thought nobody could touch me because I see where they were shooting and everything. So I kind of let my guard down and I got wounded. So I stepped up, told myself I quit my little drinking and everything. Start going after them. I said, I'm going to start using that hunting, what I learned from hunting. How you do that, Chief? I said, back home we got bucks and we got does. We'll make the NVA bucks and the VC does. I'm going to get a body count. It became easy because there was daytime problems. There was a lot of them. Were challenging us in the daytime. Challenging armor in the daytime. I said, like to see them ambushing small patrols, but you go up against the armor, you got nothing but firepower there. One RPG level this room here, that's the one of the main weapons they had. But they had to get out in the open, expose themselves to use it. They tried to ambush him, but big black puff of smoke there ain't gonna hide you. Theirs was black, ours is kind of white, then it'll turn black. The law, they call ours a light hand weapon law. Like it was fast and real deadly. A lot of firepower, too. Some of those Vietnamese units, when they got Kit Carson came out, he said, 68, you guys kick our ass all the way up to North Vietnam. Then you stop, let us rebuild. I said, politics. Probably got a new president then. And I think that's why one of our presidents met his demise, because I was a freshman when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I started reading up on it. A lot of things he was involved in. He was going to pull the people back from South Vietnam. I was fishing with John Hitchman on the Johnny A, real fancy boat, one of the best boats in Southeast. He was been the highliner for all the years I fished with him. $50,000 every fishing season. Now I just retired and I only make about $10,000-$11,000 down there at the ISB. I got a wound over my old Vietnam wound too. Shrapnel was just like a hot razor. That's when I let my guard down. It's when I got this Purple Heart. Well, they send us boxes, care packages and everything. Cookies and everything like that. By the time we get over there, there's little crumbs. But we ate that rain over there, about a foot long, the monsoon season. A little creek over there, it'll turn into a big river. You know, beyond there, the flashlights, boy. Then he couldn't believe the animals and the snakes. Big. He threw his weapon away, he started running. He was supposed to be quiet when we're in new AO recon. They laugh about it now, but back then they almost could have shot him. When you go out different kind of patrols out there, you got to find the enemy, get your butt out of there. They call that one snoop and poop. But then if you go out and search and destroy, you got to make sure you have machine guns, claymores, grenade launchers, everything. Then you have a guy with either calling artillery and air power, because we had our own Hueys over there, firepower, air power. If we got the heavy contact, we just call them and then get your ass out of there while they're peppering the hell out of them. The napalm probably covered a place down here to the store down there, just tumbling over. You don't want to go down there and make a body count. You see what that napalm does to a body. Sticks to the body and just all the way down to the bone. When I was going over, I went to Japan, Yokota. Then from, well, I left for stateside. I left from Fort Lee, went to Washington, stops in between there. Then I went to Anchorage, then Anchorage to Japan, Japan to Vietnam, Cameron Bay. Then Cameron Bay, I had to jump on another flight to go down to Long Binh. That was quite a place, Saigon. You could smell the place. It smelled like dry fish over there. Yeah. Everything smoked and dried. You grew up on that around here. You used to have smokehouses around here. Then they used to dry their squid. Taste something like our halibut. Real good. And you get officers coming over. You can't be eating it. I said, I'm learning how to speak Vietnamese too. Plus, I'm eating your food. I'm still kind of leery about their rice, though. You know, that one spoiled me on that rice. Never got over that, too, when I had just seen how they fertilize it. And that's what they were fighting over there in South Vietnam. People were growing the rice, and they were getting treated like dirt. Big bags, almost as long as the table. Rice was like gold to them. Even the Viet Cong was coming, grabbing what they were making there in Tien Anh province. So it was like a rice bowl up there, but it was a beautiful place. When we got in the fight with the 33rd Regiment, some of those women were workers by day, fighters by night. Some of them were even prostitutes. I asked the guy, how you know this? Well, we got a Viet Cong with us too, Chua Hoai Kit Carson, to tell us all the information was about some of the people that we got into a firefight with. Said, anytime they got all kinds of information on you guys, then they'll attack you. They mess around. But a lot of them, I think, were overrated. The only time they ever won any battles, I think, over there is when they took on small units. Most of that you can probably blame on your own higher officers. Start thinking they're Superman. Start thinking something like that, you're not coming back. I'm 85, so I had a kind of a big say on how some of the patrols would go. We're walking on this trail here. I said, no. We're going to go off about 15 feet off the trail, and then we'll walk. The trail's right here. I said, I know it. You come to Alaska, you'll see a deer trail. You can follow that because they don't make booby traps. But these Viet Cong been here making these trails for thousands of years. And they're booby-trapped, and a lot of you guys are going home with no legs and everything. I'm going home with everything. Well, I don't know how I put that, because I took that sociology, psychology. If you're not white, you're not bright, and stuff like that. Well, even the professor made that remark once in a while. He said, you're going to hear all kinds of that slang. The one here I experienced was in Fort Lee, Virginia. I was going through a rigor school, and they had a loudmouth Italian, kind of husky, bigger than I was. He used to get all his booze. My mother will send him a jar of fruit, but it'll have that hard liquor in there. He was okay when he was sober. When he got drunk, he was something like I was. He was not scared of anything. So we got into a scrap. Then that sergeant and captain seen that. Yeah, that guy whip you. I thought they were talking to me. I said, no, he's not going to whip me. No, we're talking to the other guy. The guy that you're beating up there. I said, I ain't beating him up yet. I slapped him once. That's all. Got a little cut right here when I hit him with my backhand. Almost got a summary court-martial because I wouldn't let that Italian whip my ass. Well, you start counting the days when you get to your last month over there. You can get down to counting the minutes. But they'll send you back to the rear. I was in the front lines. They'll send you back to the rear about 4 or 5 days early. You got to go in there and start soaking in hot springs because the stuff that comes out of your pores is green slime. Just comes out. Then your feet, bottom of your feet there, the if it dries up too fast, the skin there, we peel them off. Some of the guys had it bad to stink. Trench foot. Get it wet, dry, get it wet, then dry, get it wet, then dry. So thick skin just come off. It's like babies behind when they touch your bottom of your feet. Them guys can't walk around, they have to ride around. A lot of crazy things that happen over there. I see so much and I don't wish anything on nobody. I wasn't a Christian or anything, but you're brought into this world to destroy somebody that you had nothing against. I guess I saved my bacon with a couple of times. I couldn't understand the signal of the guy holding a weapon. Me and you, same, same. That's what the Vietnamese was telling me. I said, he's the enemy. He hesitated. They said, don't do that. You hesitate, you're dead. I didn't even have to shoot him, though, because the Vietnamese blew him away. Got to get a lot of the weapons. Couldn't keep them because he had officers make those rules. Only they can take a weapon home. You can't for a souvenir. We got a lot of souvenirs up in Cambodia. Stolen the Cosmoline, wrapped up AK-47s. Even had those grease guns from World War II. Stolen the Cosmoline, brand new. Boy, I said, these are trophies here. We get to keep nothing of them. Turn everything over. Found a really good pistol too there. Couldn't keep that. Enlisted personnel, I said, you make rules for us, but you guys don't have any. I said, a couple of you guys are going on with the pretty good souvenirs that we got captured. That's the kind of crap you had to go through over there. I said, well, I survived, but you guys can kiss my ass goodbye. Shook hands in California. I drank pretty heavy for all that. I just stopped, and my uncle said, get back in there. Get it out of your mind. Go fishing. Because we knew how to fish in the islands of skiffmen. My whole family was skiffmen. My dad was the oldest, and he had three brothers that were skiffmen. Then my older brother James and myself, we were all skiffing out there. I fished with one uncle. He corked the whole family. One day, everything was Huna. I got a big allowance when I went to the gold medal tournament, got my own room. I was 18 years old, got a ticket for the meals. Imperial Bar, you see where the restaurant was at. Go down there and just eat. Huna had one of the best fleets in the Southeast, and we had still had 30-some boats. And I could get on any boat I wanted because I knew how to run the power skiff out there. Skiff man. My dad was already retired, and my brother James and I were doing it. Some of my classmates were running boats already. I made a mistake fishing for the best fisherman out of Huna, John Hinchman, Sr., 25 years. And I found out why he kept me with him, too, because I was up for a boat back in 79. He didn't tell me. I looked at him, I said, what's going on? You guys are the only ones that can put my seine together. Yeah, break that seine down to 250 fathoms long. And it's about 20-some fathoms deep. Got to sew the seine together, starting the coke line, lead line, everything. Got to measure them 10 pulls. Each time you sew it up, the seine and the lead line, and hang it. You got to teach some of the guys how to do sew and hang and everything. That was probably the reason I didn't get a boat. I found out from the superintendent of the excursion of why. He said, you were up for a boat in 79. You could have had your own boat. I said, it would have been nice. But back then, we were struggling here in Huna, the fishing kind of going downhill. Then they started that limited entry and closed the Indian Islands, closed Wendell office, home shore. Out here, all the places where we fish. I said, the people that fish in Haines and Juneau are gillnetters, and their buddies are up there in the legislature. Why do you know all this? I said, I've been higher than high school. I've been fishing out here. They come out and take a look at us, what we're doing, what they're catching, how much we're catching. And I said, my grandfather up there, my mother's father was one of the highliners up in Haines. He said, no, we're getting our fish. We're still getting our fish. He said, it's just some of you people that don't know how to fish are making these new rules and laws that are affecting the rest of the Southeast. So Angoon used to have a big fleet, Cake, Huna, Sitka, Ketchikan. We used to have the big fleet coming from Puget Sound too. They fished out there by us, but they couldn't fish with us because they didn't know how to fish those tides out there in the islands, like a river sometimes, especially in the laundry. They'll panic when the seine disappears. Only goes down so far, probably about a couple of fathoms. They'll be still coming down. You'll know when you hang up, the parish grip will stop. Then you open up as wide as you can and start zigzagging, and you have to tear it off the bottom and keep going. You can always repair the seine. Spooky though, at laundry then. The first time I got in there, I started cussing. Then I got a walkie-talkie jockey guy that works under you in a skiff. Are you okay? I said, yeah. I said, look up ahead of us. You look at it, water's boiling there. What are you going to do? Speed up, we're going to go through it full bore. It paid off, though. I had for about almost 7 or 8 years. You chose the boats, made money. It helped your character, too. It's like you matured a little faster. That's probably what helped, too, before I went to Vietnam. Because I came home just for summertime to make some money, go back to school, back to college. Then I got my draft notice. You're going to go in the fall time. I thought it was kind of macho then, but my brother and guys are getting ready to come home already, and I'm getting ready to go over. That took a lot out of my mother and father. When James went over and James got wounded, the movie they made, Hamburger Hill, he got shot through the shoulder. And I watched that movie quite a few times, and I know you guys did something over there, but what they did to you guys was stupid. Had them lose all them guys, all those Americans there, then after you get the hill, they gave it back. It's like what Trump's doing to them people in Syria now, and Kurds. Same thing in Vietnam. I made buddies with that Viet Cong, Kit Carson. You guys are going home. You guys are leaving us. I said, Doug, I have some guys coming back. Most of you are pulling out. So you watch that movies where I was stationed close to that place, Saigon, where they're jumping on them choppers and everything. Most of them Vietnamese were doing that with the rich, the ones working both sides of the fence, black market. Crooked that whole South Vietnamese hierarchy was there for the money. A lot of money there coming from the United States too. If I couldn't find a part for my machine gun, I'd go to the black market and buy one. From my M60 or M16. I ask you at the armor, how come they have and you don't? You find somebody on the higher up that are selling these things to the black market. That's why it's not reaching us. Everything was just crooked. So I had to start thinking like a thief too to survive. We started working in the South Vietnamese unit, who had to call it Vietnamization. We had to work with the South Vietnamese. They stole everything that wasn't nailed down. Come back a week later, it's in the black market, selling back to you. Even the sea rations. Sea rations, we just give the candy and stuff to the kids. You know, some of the adults are taking it away from them. It's kind of pathetic when you see something like that around there. But it does happen every day. That's why you get used to it. Just start worrying about yourself and make sure you get home. While I was in Vietnam, I was out in the field, so no place to spend your money. You're going to ready to go on R&R, but you only need about $500-$600 then. I came home with about almost $16,000-$17,000. No place to spend the money was in Vietnam. It was a lot of money back then, for this town especially. I used to make it from here to Juneau, $11 on Gulf State Airlines. Stay at the gas station for $12 a night. I thought that was a lot of money then. Right there by the hill. They get one of those houses up on the hill where my younger brother's staying at. This is what I paid for. I went over 195 and I came back 170. I felt good then. come back and I started playing basketball again. I ran down the court a few times and practicing dribbling. Damn near could dunk it. I couldn't dunk it anymore, though, the basketball. I went to jump school. I thought they were kidding. 7.5 miles a day running in formation. I said, you kidding me? I don't know what the hell my brother was making fun of me because I was infantry. I just finished up Fort Lewis. And he started calling me Leg. I thought, what is a leg? I joined jump school. I was kind of scared of heights too, but I joined jump school. It's in the 250-foot tower. Look down. They let you go. Poop. It takes a while to open up to. That's your first experience. And what takes most of that experience away is when you get to go run in formation. Every laying there moaning and groaning and cramping everything. That's when that racial problem too is getting real bad in Fort Benning, Georgia. Most of your jump masters are colored, so the color guys start following their lead, trying to prove that they were better than the whites. And us, also the Spanish guys are all in between. I said, it happened to Fort Lewis, too. Grab a chair, we'll go up behind the bunkhouse and watch Saturday night fights. Every night, all the way to Vietnam, too, the same thing. But on the front lines, you hardly ever seen it. Once in a while, you'll get a call guy talking back or coming back with his own philosophy and everything. He said, my worst enemies are stateside, not here. He said, after I fight this war, I had to go back home and fight another war. Well, then you should be prepared for this one, I think. He looked at me, to hell with you. You better get used to it. Because I got the same kind of problem. Got kind of bad here for a while, too. But we got into fights with the guys that were fishing in Puget Sound. A lot of them were college students. Because you guys came out of the Stone Age, second-class citizens, everything. Racial. Then they made a mistake. They challenged us on basketball. John Fine worked for the BIA, heavy equipment. Paul Rudolph was a skiff man. A skipper. I was a skiff man. Anything, George? I said, let's go eat these up for breakfast. I went back from 170 back up to 190. Started playing ball. I could shoot. Paul Rudolph, 40 points a game, 45 points, 48 points. Big John, he get about 30 points. Ray Howard, almost 30. Dennis Gray, pretty close to the same. They used to make fun of Dennis because he was short, kind of chunky. I said, why are you making fun of him? He could be stabbing out there on the top of the key making three-pointers because they didn't have three-pointers then, the line. But that's where we shot from. Jump shots, set shots, everything. Then Harlem Stars, and we played them. Okay, I got this guy there. Call him Paul Rudolph. What do they call that? Turkey, chubby turkey, cream puffs or something. Butterball. Call Paul Rudolph, Butterball. George, what did he call me? I said, why did you go ask him? Because Paul, he's really easy going, but he's big, muscle bound, everything. He said, you're fat. Oh, you put it that way, George? He just smiled at me. Let's eat these guys up. The Honda Stars, well, that big guys. My man was 6'4", and he was the guard. Their tallest guy was 6'11", 6'10". Paul Rudolph's man was 6'8". They could move pretty good, handle the ball, everything. They were trying to show off in front of us. I told them, no, we're a little too fast for you guys. We know what to expect, too, because we started showing off, too, the ball. I made about 6 or 7 fast breaks, bench warmer. They thought they were going to have it easy. Oh, the bench is coming in. I told the color guy, I said, our bench is faster than the first lineup. And the guy there is only 6'3", is Kenny Schoonover. He could all jump Big John by almost a foot. They shoot a heck shot straight at the basket. He'd make it sometimes, but he could jump. So the color guys found out. They said, oh, we get to take a break. After 2 minutes, Jesus Christ, they're faster. Johan Dibdo, myself, Andy Jack, he died in a car crash over there in Juneau. Well, we had a pretty good team. That's the pictures I always keep on the wall. I thought about that when I was in Vietnam, the gold medal. I went to about, it was 4 gold medals. I got 2 championships and everything before I got drafted. I always thought about the crowd, especially the native people. It's like growing up in high school, considered just like enemies. Like Hunter Braves, that was just the way communities all picked on each other for all who was better. Then I came back home, Hunter A&B, somebody got sick and one of the guys got hurt. So Hunter A&B wasn't going to go to gold medal. I got a call from Cake. Linda, if you want to play the Cake? I said, you're kidding me. I know you had trouble in high school. I said, trouble? There's 3 guys on your roster that I physically got in a fight with. Well, they're going to be playing alongside them, gold medal. I said, this is interesting. I'll be there. They copied everything we did in Hunter. They gave us allowance, got us room and board, everything. Then I told myself, I'm going to play against my other hometown. My mother's from Clarkmont. I asked to play with them. Got one family up there thought they were super duper Hotch family, my cousins. Lindoff, what are you doing? I said, I'm playing against you guys. Oh, yeah, you did that. Huna's not here. I said, I'm here. That's what counts. I'm here. I said, we're going to play you guys. Tournament hasn't even started yet. I know it. You guys want to let me play with you guys? We're going to play you guys now. Because they had a pretty good team. Then the guys I was playing with on Cake, Ray Howard played with us too, then Billy Bean, all the guys are Hall of Famers. Wound up playing Clarkmont for championship night. We were 1 point down, and I grabbed a rebound and was running by the scorer bench going by there. The guy from Clarkmont followed me. My uncle was cussing the hell out of him. He was the coach for Clarkmont. What the hell did you do that for? We're ahead. When they followed me, it was 1-1. I made the first one, tied it up. I made the second one. We went ahead. There was only a few seconds to go. They were passing the ball. I stole the ball from them. My cousins and relatives from Clarkmont were all ready to... I'm supposed to be going up to Anchorage again for that smell and taste. A bunch of other complications. So I worked log ships with loud noises. Used to bother me for a while. Then zip line used to bother me. Then I got the hearing aids from the VA, and I tried to listen to that loud squealing and log chip and the zip line. Told the lady, that's too damn loud to turn it down. She put it on there, and too clear. You can hear your heartbeat. You can hear yourself breathing. Especially when you try to go to sleep, too. You can hear yourself. I said, it's weird. Real small hearing aids. So I got to go take that back and let them put it through that machine again. And I told the doctor I still want that smell and taste back. I don't know what the hell causing that because they've been checking me up everything. I said, what the hell causes that? I said, before my smell and taste went away, I said, we need to send you that tear gas. Get that charcoal, strong taste in the back of your throat and your nose. It's going to make your eyes burn water. I said, I had a little sensation like that before I lost my smell and taste.